All right, so before it was a fake out, this is the actual last year, and I really just wanted to finish up a couple of last pieces that relate to Ger Katan that are most halach l'maisa. I mean, we said a little bit of the lamdas and trying to figure out the shittos and rishonim and exactly how that doesn't work because it's begufo shel katan, or does it work midin zechia, and all the technicalities and some nafkaminas, but you know, this does have to play out in halach in a certain way. So what I want to talk about is, first of all, something that's very common is we have a case of gir katanim from mishpachos that are not shom, two mishpachos that are not shomer Torah mitzvos. A lot of times you'll have, for example, grandparents who are from, and the parents are not from, and they adopt a child, and they want to be megayer the child. You know, there's going to be their parents' grandchild, so they want to be megayer the child, and they want it done in an Orthodox way, so that meaning they're going to be megayer the child. They're happy doing it with conservative reform. They're not from anyway, so they don't really care that much. But they know that so the grandparents insist, if you're going to do it, you got to do it so that you can make sure that my grandchild is from. So are you allowed to even do such a gerus? Can you do a gerus into a family where the child is going to be raised eating nevelos and treifos? Child is going to be raised not going to yeshiva. Child is going to be raised not observing Shabbos. So this is a very, very major debate in terms of giur ketanim, and this emerged a lot in the 19th and 20th centuries when it became more of a thing. You know, I'll tell you a Maisa Shahaya, a good friend of mine who lives in Canada, sometimes takes in foster children from time to time, and he says that the government sometimes needs Jewish homes to take in Jewish children, and especially after COVID, when so many families had so much dysfunction, there were a lot more foster homes needed, because there was a lot of families that just fell apart. So there's a high supply of children and a low supply of Jewish homes to take in those children. So this friend of mine took in a teenage girl who was brought up in the conservative home. And they just found out that she was brought up in a conservative home and she was adopted. She was adopted by the conservative couple where she grew up. So at first, you know, they weren't getting straight answer from the parents whether she was or was not adopted. But now the agency informed them that she, in fact, was adopted. And they don't have a record of any gerus, but if the Frum family gives her up, she's likely going to be placed in a Catholic home, that there weren't enough Jewish homes to go around. So if my friend were to say, no, thank you, you know, because they can give her up at any time. They just house girls for, you know, or boys or girls, you know, for as long as they can. And they have the full right to say after X number of weeks or X number of months that, you know, maspik kvar, it's just not working out. And, you know, so if they give her up, though, she'll likely be placed in the Catholic home. So this is very nokeya, meaning, let's assume she had a conservative gerus. Was the gerus valid? She was being megayer into a home that was not shomer Torah mitzvahs. So if the gerus was valid, then you can't give her up and let her go to a Catholic home. But if the gerus was not valid, what do you need? Why maliul tzarazos? Why do you need to be raising a non-Jewish girl in your home? So it was a very, very difficult issue that they faced. So it's important to have a little bit of background about these issues. We discussed conservative gerus a little bit, right? But we didn't really discuss adopting into a family where you have the zechiah aspect in play, adopting into a family that doesn't observe Torah mitzvah. So this was a major, major debate that developed. And the question is whether the Beis Din is considered to be zocha for a child in such a situation, because the child is going to be raised in an environment where halacha is not being observed at all. So the child is most likely going to grow up to be an adult who regularly violates Shabbos and Kashrus and everything else. So l'chora could depend on the machlokas we discussed earlier today. Meaning if it's a din in zachin, so then you really need to have this conversation. Is this a zuchus? Meaning what's better, to be a non-Jew or to be a Jew who violates halacha regularly? That's a very important question. It's a hashkafic question, but it's very nogeah, halach lemaisa, whether the Beis Din is empowered even to do a zechiah for the katan. But if it's a din, like Tosfos and Sanhedrin said, that it's a maisa begufo shel katan, and it could be, and the Kabbalah's mitzvahs will come when it comes as an adult or won't come, so then there's nothing wrong with doing it. You could do the maisa gerus right now, and it'll either do the Kabbalah's mitzvahs or won't do the Kabbalah's mitzvahs when he gets older. If he does the Kabbalah Smitzos, wonderful, because it'll be a full-fledged Jew. And if he doesn't do the Kabbalah Smitzos, he'll be missing a part of the Geirah, since, like Rav Ashwari said, Goyim Yisrael Mafreya, that he was never a Jew. So there would be no problem with doing such a Geirah, according to Tosfos Sanhedrin. The problem is only going to be when he becomes a Bar Mitzvah, if he will have to be Mekabel Mitzvahs to be a Jew. And you're going to sit him down and you're going to say, Mekabel Mitzvahs? And he's going to say, what's a Mitzvah? Right? Meaning, Mekabel Kashrus, what's kosher? Right? So that's going to be a little more challenging. But in the meantime, there's nothing wrong with doing it according to Sanhedrin. So that's the debate. So, meaning that's why it's Tully in that Chakira. So there are three basic shitos on this issue. Rav Yitzchak Lapanovitcher has a tshuva, in tshuva Zecher Yitzchak and Simon Beis, where he says that the Geirus is absolutely possible in such a case. You know for sure that he's going to violate all of the halachas of the Torah. He's going to be Mechal Shabbos, he's going to be over in Kashrus and Tarsa Mishpacha and everything. So he's going to be raised in such a home without any of these Yisodei Hadas and basics of halacha. It's absolutely not a zuchus. There's nothing wrong with being a non-Jew who's a moral, ethical person. Let him continue to be that way. It's absolutely not a zuchus for the person to be a Jew. In fact, the Tshuvas Chavtzelis HaSharon in Yerodeh Chelik Aleph Simen Ayin Hey says the same thing. It's so obvious that he's going to violate the entirety of Torah. And I don't know if it's surprisingly or not surprisingly, Rav Avraham Yitzchak Cohen Cook in Tshuvas Das Cohen in Simen Kuf Mem Zayin also is very strict about this and says that it's only considered a zechia if you know that the kid is going to observe Torah as an adult, if you know that the kid is going to be shomer Torah u'mitzvos. So it's interesting because Rav Kook seems to even set a higher standard. That you have to be very confident that he will be shomer Torah mitzvos. Whereas Rav Yitzchak Lapanovitcher seems to be saying that, you know, it's no good if it seems clear that he won't be shomer Torah mitzvah. Sounds like if you're on the line, if you're like, it could go either way, you know, that Rav Kook would say no good, and Rav Yitzchak Lapanovitcher would say that it's fine. But if you're confident that he's not going to observe Torah mitzvahs, that's when you have a problem. So that is shita number one. Shita number two is the Tshuvas Beis Yitzchak. In the Tshuvas Beis Yitzchak in Yerodeah, Tinyana, Simon Kuf, and also in Eben Ezer, he says that it's definitely preferable to be a Jew. It's definitely something that's a zechus to be a Jew, and whatever mitzvahs he does, he's going to, you know, Kol Yisrael Yeshem Chelik Olam Haba. You know, everyone always quotes that first line of the Mishnah. No one likes to quote the rest of it, but still, Kol Yisrael Yeshem Chelik Olam Haba. We'll sing songs about it. It'll be great. And this person could be a Jew. We're giving him a Chelik in Olam Haba. What better zechus could there be? Reb Chaim Eizer and Tshuvas Achiezer says the same. That of course it's good to be a Jew. Rav Moshe seems to say the same. But Rav Moshe might be a third view. But Rav Moshe seems to say the same. Rav Moshe, Nigris Moshe Ibn Ezra Chelik Dalet Simul Chavav, says that, and this is Rav Moshe Lishitaso in terms of his Hashkafa, right? It's famous that Rav Moshe has written in Darash Moshe, that Rav Moshe held very strongly that there was an entire generation of frum parents that saw to it that their children would go off the derech by constantly complaining about how terrible Yiddishkeit is. That they were moser nefesh to not work on Shabbos. These parents were moser nefesh to keep kosher. They were moser nefesh to do everything. But every day they'd come home from work and they would say that it's Shveretz Zayin Yid, that it's so difficult to be a Jew, it's so hard, it's such a mysterious nefesh. And the kids kept hearing this over and over and over again, Ramesha said. And after a while they just said, if it's so Shveretz Zayin Yid, no thank you, I don't need it. And they went off and did whatever, you know, and pursued an entirely different lifestyle. Ramesha held that you have to, one of the most basic yesodos of chinuch is that you impart into the children that it's geshmak to be a Yid, that it's really wonderful to be a Yid, that my second geshmak to be a Yid reference today, right? That it's absolutely wonderful, it's absolutely amazing to be a Jew. There's no greater zuchus to be a Jew. And this Rav Moshe paskins it lahalacha. He paskins it lahalacha. Rav Moshe writes that, think about it. If the person is a non-Jew, so okay, so they're a non-Jew, the chayiv and shavim mitzvos, maybe they'll keep the shavim mitzvos, maybe they won't, but that's it. There's a, definitely a ceiling on what they can accomplish. If the person is a Jew, so they're not going to be educated in Torah mitzvos, so they'll probably be a tinuk shenishba. They're probably going to be like a Jew who's an anus on every single avera that he does. He doesn't know about kashrus, doesn't know about Shabbos. Everything is anus rachman apatre. He has no idea about anything. So every avera he does is going to be an anus. He may have some vague familiarity with kashrus or Shabbos, but he doesn't know that it's something that you have to do, right? In the conservative reform worlds, the word mitzvah, you know, the word mitzvah really has many meanings to it, right? It means a command, it means a good deed, it means, right? So there's a mitzvah kiyumis, there are lots of different kinds of mitzvahs. But in the Rav Blachman actually gave a shiur about that in my shul this year about what the word mitzvah means. But the word mitzvah means certainly many different things if you're being honest about it. But in many circles, the word mitzvah just means a good deed. It means helping an old lady cross the street. That's what a mitzvah means. Meaning there is no command. Command is so overbearing. Like there are no commands. There are no things that you have to actually do that you know that religion actually demands of you. So even if they heard of Shabbos, they heard of Kashrus. So how is it? I remember when. My wife once, I don't remember when it was, right after we got married, I think there was it used to be a thing that a lot of Stern girls, to make some extra money, would teach in it was a Reform temple that had or a conservative temple that had a Hebrew school, and they would get a lot of the Stern girls to teach in the Hebrew school. So they would sit them down first and say listen, these kids don't come from religious families, so you can't be teaching them about checking their vegetables for bugs, you can't be teaching them about shok bi isha erva or whatever, you got to go through a double cone mahalich, you have to be very I got to stop making that joke. So how do I teach about Shabbos? How do you teach about Shabbos? You say that some have a custom to keep Shabbos. Some have a custom not to drive in Shabbos. Some have a custom not to drive in Shabbos. It's a Ziyaf HaTorah. You're not allowed to say such a thing, right? You have to figure out a way to say it. But maybe Torah observant Jews don't drive on Shabbos or something like that. But some have. But that's the whole mentality, is that some have a custom. So says Rav Moshe, it's on the Shulchan Patrei in every single aveira that they do and every mitzvah that they do. They get credit as a mitzvah v'yosa. There's nothing better than getting credit as a mitzvah gadol, a mitzvah v'yosa, yosa v'yishayin, a mitzvah v'yosa. Plus, says Rav Moshe, who are we to say that this person is not going to become from? We just heard a whole Musar Shmuz from Rabbi Bamberger about the one voted least likely to succeed is very likely to actually succeed. So you think, because they're being brought up in this kind of home that they're never going to be successful as a from Jew. No, they might be the most likely to succeed. The person that you think is the least likely to succeed. So Rav Moshe, therefore, thought that you can't do such a geirus. Such a geirus is valid. However, Rav Moshe in the Dibros seems to be not as committed to that mahalik. He seems to say, look, it's a big machlokas aposkim, it's a sveka didina. And the Dibros, no one really reads the Dibros so much because it's really, really hard. But Rav Moshe was certainly much prouder of his Dibros than he was of his Igros. The Igros Moshe, where he asked him a question, so he wrote an answer to the question. The Dibros Moshe, that was his sefer, right? That's what he wrote. Meaning that was the sefer that he worked on. The only thing is, to learn a piece in Dibros Moshe, you'd have to as Rav Baruch Simon used to tell us when I was in the Shir early admissions year, he said, if you ever have 12 hours straight to really break your head, try to do a piece in Dibros Moshe. It would be very, very geshmak way to spend 12 hours breaking your head. But that's they say Rav Moshe, those were his shiurim. He would give shiurim on Friday morning in the yeshiva in MTJ. I can't imagine anyone understood it, right? Meaning probably there were a couple of people that, Rav Nissen Alpert probably understood it, but there probably weren't too many other talmidim that were able to understand it. But that was Rav Moshe's real sefer, his Dibros. So there are sections of the Dibros where he has ha'aros, where he has smaller pieces, smaller ha'aros. Those are much more accessible, I guess you'd say. My brother likes to learn Dibros, because my brother married into the family, so he's very into everything Rav Moshe, so he likes to learn the Dibros Moshe. But so Rav Moshe would l'chora treat such a kid as at least a Safek Yisrael. Safek Yisrael, Safek Nachri, which might be the very worst thing to be, right? Meaning you at least want to know what you are. So it might be the very worst thing to be. Rabbi Reis, Rabbi Jachter quotes that Rabbi Reis had said that the Rabbanut Beis Din Eretz Yisrael also treats it like a Safek. But Rav Moshe says, if it's matzui that the kid is going to be shomer Torah mitzvos, then you're allowed to do the gerus. And particularly if he's going to be put in a school where he's taught Torah by shomer Torah mitzvos teachers, meaning even if he's being raised in a non-religious family, but they're enrolling the child in a school of shomer Torah mitzvos, so that's good enough also. I may have told the story at the very beginning of the summer, like right before camp started, I got an emergency message from someone that I know. Rabbi, we need to speak to you. My siblings and I need to speak to you. So we set up a Zoom meeting for like 11 o'clock that night. So siblings from all different communities, Mechanchim and Marbitzei Torah, and like wonderful, each one is a leader in their community. And they said they just found out their grandmother passed away. They just found out that their mother was a Gerkata, that their mother was converted as Gerkata, and she grew up in a home that was not Shomer Torah Mitzvos. My grandmother's home was not Shomer Torah Mitzvos, and they did a Gerkata on her as when she was whatever 5 years old. It was their mother, so they said my mother became a balas tshuva at 26 so that she could marry my father. That's what they said. At the age of 26, she wasn't observant of Torah mitzvos until the age of 26, and the only gear she had was when she was a katan. So now what? Right now what? So nu, you just don't care katan. So what are you telling? So if you assume like Tosfos and Sanhedrin, it's perfectly fine. She could do a couple of mitzvahs, whatever, right? She could do it when she's 120, right? It's totally va'omid, but she could do a couple of mitzvahs whenever, right? If you hold like that, it works mitin zechia. So higdili chol lirchos, but she would have to be mocha, right? She was never mocha, but you would also need it to actually be a zechus. So was it a zechus? So it's only a zechus if you hold that she stands a good chance, according to many poskim. So did she stand a good chance? So I said, is there a certificate of giur? Like, let's find out who is on the basis. Problem is, by the time these shilas come up, almost always the dayanim are dead, right? Meaning they come up 50 years later when the grandchild is getting married or something, right? I mean, that's when these shilas come up. And the dayanim are always much older than the people, right? So almost always the dayanim are gone by then. So I said, who are the Dayanim on the Beis Din? So they said, we don't know this name. I couldn't believe they didn't know the name because he's from family. They said, Rabbi Yeruchim Gorelick. I'm like, yeah, okay, that's a pretty frum person. Rabbi Yeruchim Gorelick was probably leading Talmud of the Brisker Rav. He was Rosh Yeshiva in Yeshiva University, even though his children won't admit that he was Rosh Yeshiva in Yeshiva University. He barely admitted that he was Rosh Yeshiva in Yeshiva University. He's a very, strong personality. If you hear Rabbi Kahn Shlita talk about Rav Yerucham Gorelick, he said like he'd come into the Beis Medrash, it was like a tornado hit the Beis Medrash. Like he'd have a chiddush and everyone had to hear the chiddush. So Rav Kahn said he was on learning the Beis Medrash. Rav Gorelick just came over, grabbed him by the lapels, and just started screaming a chiddush in his face. Like Rav Yerucham Gorelick was a Rav Shechter was in Rav Gorelick's year when he was a teenager. When Rav Shechter was a junior in high school, they put him in Rav Soloveitchik's shir because there was nothing that could challenge him in high school anymore. But Rav Soloveitchik only gave shir 2 days a week, so or 3 days a week. So they thought it wasn't right that a high school boy should not be in shir, two of the days of the week. So they said it's not right. He can't take a day off 2 days a week from shir. So they put him in Rav Gorelick's shir the other days. So he was in Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Gorelick's shir at the same time. So he said that he remembers often Rav Gorelick would be learning a sugya, and you'd get to a Rashi and say, "Nu Herschel, what did Rav Soloveitchik say about this Rashi?" And Rav Shechter would say, "Rav Soloveitchik didn't discuss this Rashi." So Rav Gorelick would say, "Ah, just like you learn from Gedolim what to say on, you also learn from Gedolim what to skip. We're skipping this Rashi, right?" That was Rav Gorelick was very animated. So Rav Gorelick, was a serious person, right? He wasn't just Stam making gerim for no reason. So I said, there must be a story over here. What happened? Like, what was the context? Why were they Megayer? Why were they Megayer her? So he said, yeah, because Bubby wasn't Jewish and she was Megayer, earlier, but she wanted to be, she was only Megayer after the two daughters were born. And he said, even though my grandfather married a non-Jewish woman who only went through whatever kind of gerus afterwards, even though he did that, he was absolutely insistent as a Holocaust survivor that his kids have to go to yeshiva. So she said, my mother went to Beis Yaakov of Brooklyn, and she was the, or Beis Yaakov Borough Park or something, and she was the only non-religious kid in Beis Yaakov of Borough Park, but the Beis Yaakov wouldn't accept her unless they got a giur. So probably what happened was, they went to Rabbi Grelick, and they said, would you do the giur? And he said, you got to send the kid to yeshiva. And they're like, perfect, that's exactly what we want to do. And he figured that there's a better than 50-50 chance, or at least a 50-50 chance, that she will be from one day. And guess what? Kachava. Meaning it didn't happen right away when she was 12, but when she was 26 it happened, and she knew how to be, she knew what to do, she knew how to be from, because she went to Beis Yaakov, right? So that but that might be subject to this machlokas. So if there's a reasonable chance, so Rav Meisher would say that that's good enough. And that's the mahalich that they sort of ejector quoted from Talmidim of Rav Soloveitchik, that it's a zuchus if the non-observant parents at least give the child a yeshiva education. So if you give the kid a yeshiva education, where you're putting them on that track. So that's typically what they do. Although obviously none of this is ideal. So in Yabia Omer, Rav Vadya writes in Chelek Beis of Nezer Siman Dalid, Kisharo Mabezin Sheish Chashash Shabanim Yichalulu Shabasos V'Yom Tovim BeGadlam Nachon Shelo LeGayron V'Imavru V'Kiblu Masha Asa. So Rav Vadya says it's not wise, but if you do it, they're Jewish, right? That's what Rav Vadya says. Meaning, if you see that there's a chashash, a reasonable chashash that they're not going to be from, then it's not wise, but if you do it, you do it. So that's also a compromise kind of opinion. I think the pashtus is we assume that it does work, certainly in the case where Rabbi Grelick was on the base, didn't even say that it works. Now, what happens very often nowadays also is that you have people who go through fertility challenges, and sometimes in the worst cases, the very worst cases is we can't do anything about it, but in some of the worst cases, they have to rely on a surrogate. That's one of the major issues of gerus nowadays, in determining the Jewishness of a child when there's surrogacy. What does surrogacy mean? It means that you have one woman whose egg is used, and another woman whose body is used to house the fertilized egg. So the husband's sperm, the wife's egg, let's say, but the wife can't carry a pregnancy, so they take that fertilized egg and put it in not a volunteer, they usually get paid about $100,000 to do this, because obviously to go through a pregnancy, you got to pay someone a lot of money to do it, so that some random woman is going to be holding the pregnancy. Or the wife doesn't have any eggs, but the wife has a uterus, so she's able to hold a pregnancy, but she can't produce a pregnancy. So they'll take an egg donor. That's a lot easier, right? Get an egg donor, some random woman, and the husband's sperm will be used to fertilize that egg. They'll put it in his wife, and the wife will carry the pregnancy. So the big shaila is, who's the mother, right? Is the mother the genetic mother, the one whose egg was used, or is the mother the gestational mother, the one who carried the pregnancy? So on the one hand, maybe just like fatherhood is defined by nothing more than contributing genetic material, right? Motherhood should be the same. But on the other hand, maybe motherhood is defined as, that's why motherhood is special. It's defined as turning genetic material into a human being. And the one who did that is the one who was a gestational mother who carried this genetic material and turned it into a human being. And that's exactly the distinction between fatherhood and motherhood. So it's very difficult to postulate something like this. Rav Sturmbach writes in Shuvas van Hagel's Chelekesim in Shin Yud Ches, Yesh la da'as, shekol hachros haposkim b'inyin apundukos, enum elam isvara. Whatever poskim say, they're just, taking a stab in the dark. They're throwing stuff against the wall, hoping it sticks. Ve'ein rayoseim osvaroseim machrios. None of the rayos or svaros could actually paskin such a halacha. Shekeninyin apundukos, chadashu. The whole thing is brand new. Ve'ein makoros me'ashas me'apos. There are no makoros on this topic. Often says that oftentimes he feels that when there are shilas like this that come up nowadays, we need a rashba. We just need the Rashba to be here. We can't do it without the Rashba here. We need the Ramban, we need the Rashba. We can't have rabbis of of the level that we have in our generation to be Machriya, such a difficult Shaila. So we might be enticed to say that we should just avoid the entire thing. But you should remember, Rav Shurmach also writes in Chelek Gimel Simtav Zayin, Lefa'amim Karav Adav L'Pikuach Nefesh. Right, to tell the couple, oh, so you'll adopt. It's okay. It's not okay with that. They're not okay with that. It's really a very traumatic thing. So there is a Jew in Los Angeles who has worked very hard on these topics in terms of clarifying these topics. The name is Tzvika Reisman. Tzvika Reisman is an executive of a cosmetics company. He's a wealthy Jew. And he dedicates a lot of his resources to putting out Svarim, his own and other people's Svarim. He writes these Svarim called Rutz Kitzvi. So he has dozens of volumes. Every time he comes out, every year he comes out with another couple of volumes. I get in the mail a couple of volumes of Rutz Kitzvi. They're very, very well written, very, very nice. So he did a lot of work on this topic. And Rabbi Bamberger actually told me that he went to Tzvika once to get funding for one of his Svarim. I don't know if you're familiar with Rabbi Bamberger's Svarim. They're awesome. They're like these beautiful books that are just very inspirational. But so he said he went to his office and he's got like this whole company running and all he's got is Svarim piled up at his desk. Like he's learning all day. It's like it's unclear exactly how he's running this whole company. But Tzvika collects all the contemporary opinions on the topic, and he first says that you should know that a lot of poskim do forbid or at least discourage going down this whole road. But he collects five shittos. It either is or isn't, right? Meaning it's either the gestational mother or it's the genetic mother. Five shittos. So he says, yeah, Rav Vadya holds the genetic mother as the mother. Rabban Tzion Abba Shaul in Or Lezion, and Tzitz Eliezer, and Rav Mordechai Eliyahu, and Rav Menachem Mendel Shafran, who's, you've heard of Rav Menachem Mendel Shafran? He's a big dayan in Bnei Brak. He wrote a very important shuva about Tcheles. I quoted in my first sefer, they all say that the gestational mother is the mother. So you have so far, okay, the two possibilities that we thought, genetic mother, gestational mother. Rav Shlomo Zalman and Rav Vosner say it's a suffix. So it's a suffix, okay? Rav Elyashiv held the genetic mother is the real mother, but you should be machmir for the opinion that the gestational mother is the mother. You should be machmir for such an opinion. And Rav Shturbach holds that they're both the mother, Betoras Vadai. Two mothers, two mommies. Wow. Okay, Rav Shurmach has a lot of surprising shittos, but that one is right up there. So as with many issues in Geirus, the approach may be different in America than it is in Israel. Because in America, we could say that we're not going to convert a child like that into a non-from family, because it's not as chus for them. But in Israel, it's not so simple. Meaning, obviously, what we do is a gir l'chumra in these situations. And we do it all the time. And very often, by the way, the family is very insulted that they're doing a gir l'chumra. Meaning, it's very often a from family, sometimes very modern family, whatever. And they're like, why do we have to do this for? It's my kid. Don't tell me it's not my kid. And they get very, very upset. They get very, you have to really talk softly to them. Baruch Hashem, Rabbi Tzvi Ram runs our days, and there's no one that talks more softly than Rabbi Tzvi Ram, and he knows how to make everyone feel good and whatever. But it's a very, very challenging thing. But in Israel, there are 1,000 such children born every year. So what are you going to do? You're not going to be, in non-from families. So in non-from families, it's a challenge because you need zechiah in order to do giur. So you're not going to do it, then you have 1,000 more Suffolk Jews. You know how many Suffolk Jews you're putting into circulation? And by the way, in the government offices, they're marked as a Jew. So now you're putting all these people that think they're Jewish, that are marked as a Jew, that we're not sure might be Jewish. The yichus things are ayom v'nora. I was once with Rav Shechter, and he got a shaila. There were grandparents. Ooh. We're going to give it 2 minutes. Right? There were grandparents that their children were no longer from, and the children couldn't have they couldn't have their own children, so they had this kind of situation. They did the daughter-in-law's egg, and they found the surrogate to carry the pregnancy, or vice versa. I don't remember it anymore. And the grandparents said, "We want our grandchild to be Jewish, so we want to do a giur. So can we do the giur?" And Rav Shechter said, "No." Rav Shechter said, "You can't do a giur if the child's not going to be sent to a yeshiva. If the child's not going to be raised in a minimally from home, because he thought that it wasn't a zechus in such a case. He paskin that it's not going to be a zechus if the child stands very little chance of being from." I tried to argue to Rav Shechter, to no avail, not surprisingly, that how could you say it's not a zechus? There's no worse thing than to be a safek. Meaning, it's a zechus to know who you are. So, like, isn't it a zechus to... You'd rather be a Jew that breaks Torah mitzvahs than to be a safek Jew who, guess what, is still not allowed to do any averos, still not allowed to be a chal Shabbos, because you're a safek Jew. That's the worst, to be a safek. In fact, if you accidentally keep a Shabbos, you might have violated an Isser. Right? Everything is, you know, everything is off if it's safek. So Rav Shechter didn't hear it, b'chal. I later found out that Rav Bakshi Doron in Binyan Av, in his Shuvas Binyan Av, in Chelik Beis, I mean, Mem has a similar idea. He talks about a case of a child who converted along with his mother and is growing up in a firm family, but now he's 15 and he discovered that he's a Ger Katan and he wanted to reject it. So Rav Bakshi Doron says that since the Chasam Sofer holds that when a person is converting with their parents, it's Zechus Gamur, like we spoke about before, and he can't be Moche, so even though we don't pask in this way in Shulchan Aruch, it's at least a Safek, and he should have to keep the mitzvos. And the question was whether he needs a new gerus, because he made a macha'a. He said at the age of 15 when he found out, I'm Moche! But he kept on keeping the mitzvos because he wasn't sure whether the macha'a worked. So Rav Bakshi Doron argues that it was a macha'a batos, since he only did it in order to be pater min mitzvos. But in the situation, he still would have been chayiv in mitzvos because he just would have been a safek. So the whole macha was macha betos. Because even if the macha, meaning even if the macha was valid, so it would have left him in a safek whether he's a Jew or a non-Jew. And that is the worst. No one wants to be a safek whether he's a Jew or non-Jew. So I tried to make that argument. Rav Shechter did not have it. I would imagine that in Eretz Yisrael you need to be much more makel about such cases, because there are many stadei safek. First of all, maybe he's already Jewish. Maybe you're allowed to be megayer a child into a family of shomer Torah mitzvos because it's nishvar tzayin yid, it's kishmak to be a Jew, and also that the michshol over there would be massive. The michshol for society would be just be a massive michshol. So these are some of the leibedik topics that you have. Oh, by the way, in the shaila with my friend in Canada, what should he do with this foster child? So he asked three people, Rav Shechter, Rav Asher Weiss, and Rav David Cohn. Two out of the three we saw this week. And so he said that Rav David Cohn said, can you give up, should he give up a child? Rav David Cohn said, absolutely not. That child might be Jewish. And he said, years ago, there were conservative rabbis who were very religious. This gerus goes back several years, goes back 10 years. It could be that there were religious dayanim on the Beis Din. The standards for ger katan aren't that high, you know, in order to qualify for ger katan. And how can you send a Jewish girl to a Catholic home? Absolutely not. Rav Shechter said, give her up, like immediately. She's not Jewish. You know, like it's a katza la katza. He said, she's not Jewish. Of course you should give her up. He said, most people that give up their kids for adoption aren't Jewish. So probably the birth parents aren't Jewish. The possible conversion by a conservative Beis Din is not even a cheshbin, meaning there's nothing. It's not even a suffix. There's nothing with a conservative Beis Din, and nothing to worry about. Rav Asher Weiss said, look, she's not Jewish, but she should not go to a different type of home. Because she thinks she's Jewish. And maybe she'll see the light at some point and do a proper conversion, or at least feel that she was taken care of when she continues her life in the Jewish community. So that's, like, so classic Rav Asher Weiss. Like, it's a, you know, like, look, la halacha, she's probably not Jewish. Eitza is, keep the long game in mind over here. And it's very likely that at some point she'll want to become Jewish, especially if she's treated properly, and especially if she already thinks that she's Jewish, she's identifying as Jew. Remember we spoke about factors to consider when greasing the wheels on conversion, and one of them is if a person thinks they're Jewish already. Right, so then that's a factor to consider when trying to make conversion go a little bit easier. Okay. Yeah.